I'm Scott Hansen with NFL Red Zone, and you are listening to the Gridiron Gentlemen.
Now then, everybody, and welcome back to the Gridiron Gentlemen podcast. This podcast has the working title, Trying My Best Not to Be a Sad Panda, and helping me out are my good buddies, James. How's it going, James?
I'm a happy panda.
Excellent. And Dan, how's it going, Dan?
I'm a sleepy panda.
Okay. So between the three of us, we are all the pandas of the triumvirate, I suppose. I don't know what panda triumvirate I'm on about. I'm delirious. Let's crack on with the podcast.
It's pandemonium already.
Hey!
That was beneath me. Or was it?
No, it's bang on your level, frankly,
and like,
James.
And like a backup kicker, we'll eat, shoot, and leave.
It's going to be one of those podcasts, isn't it? Right, so for this podcast, back in week one, or after week one, I asked everyone who joined me a series of questions. Now we are six games on from there. I'm going to ask these same questions again to see if our answers have changed much over the intervening 6 weeks. So we'll start off with question the first. What has been the biggest surprise of the NFL season so far? James, what do you reckon?
It's batshit Brian Flores and his band of misfit bastards. The Minnesota Vikings defense has been the best surprise so far. They went from a unit that last year was plucky but clearly flawed to a unit that's just, oh my good God, really rather good.
Who would have thought all they needed was a Van Ginkle to really unlock that defense?
Yes, who knew?
Who knew? Well, Brian Flores, clearly.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Pound Shop Thor has been pulling it out of the bag week after week, hasn't it?
Pound Shop Thor, I kind of love that.
it's the Wish.com version of Chris Hemsworth. But anyway, they are a legitimately impressive defense. They sort of statistically, they stack up in a very interesting way, though. So, like, if you look at some of, they rank overall in the NFL sixth on overall defense. Sixth for points allowed, but they do rank 19th for total yards allowed. But they also rank second for turnovers. They also rank 26th in the NFL for touchdown passes allowed, but first in the NFL for interceptions. So they are surrendering quantifiable sums of yardage, but they are also hashtag making big plays, getting turnovers, and making their own breaks. But not just that, outside of the passing game, they have a legitimately exceptional run defense.
Mm.
No team has faced fewer rushing attempts. A lot of that is potentially to do with the game flow. They're second in the league in rushing yards allowed, second in rushing touchdowns allowed, and fifth in yards per attempt allowed. They legitimately, statistically come across as an excellent run defense. So,
but this is what you can do when you've got an elite quarterback like Sam Darnold. So, like, you can play this kind of defense. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Hold on a minute. Is Sam Darnold setting the edge? No.
This is very similar to what the Colts used to do, though, isn't it? They used to play for the turnovers because they just wanted to get the ball back in Peyton's hand. And that's pretty much what the Vikings are doing. Brian Flores has been given carte blanche to just run riot, basically.
Because when they get the ball, they're going to control the clock and force the other team to have to start throwing the ball very early.
With Sam Darnold.
Working.
It's crazy.
It's working.
It's mad. And even when the offense sputters, the defense seems to do just enough to bag a win for them. So I was very, very pleasantly surprised by how this has worked out and just how leaning into his psychopathic tendencies has actually been the key differentiating factor for him. I really like it.
Yeah, I've got to agree. It's great fun. And it was really good fun watching him versus Ben Johnson on the weekend.
Yeah.
And Ben Johnson having the most Terminator of robot quarterbacks, apparently, was even too much for Brian Flores' defense to overcome. It was close, though. It was close, though.
It was close.
Lions just don't make many wrong moves, do they? Like, in general. Just, like, every... They take risks. Like, Ben Johnson took a risk by not becoming a head coach this year. But it really paid off. It's really paid off. Because he's now going to have his choice of teams next year, pretty much. Like, he's I think, far and away, the best coordinator in the league at the moment. He is doing things that other coordinators wouldn't dream of, and he's not playing himself out of the games as well, like most of them do. So, like, he is doing some crazy stuff. He's doing some not crazy, but he's doing some stuff that involves serious thought. There we go. And it's not backfiring, because he seems to just be able to see about 10 seconds into the future. So it seems to work for him. It's good.
Who do you think is calling better offense at the moment then? Ben Johnson or Todd Monken?
Ben Johnson.
I think it's a very closely run thing. I think Ben Johnson has the advantage of an exceptional offensive line.
True.
I'd like to think that if Todd Monken had to put together a game plan for the Lions, the results would be similar. Probably not quite as good as a Ben Johnson game plan might possibly be. But I think if the Ravens had the Lions offensive line, it would be over.
But with the Lions, with the Ravens, they're fine because they've got Lamar Jackson blocking downfield anyway. So it's somewhat crazy.
What could possibly go wrong there?
Yeah, no, that will obviously end fantastically. But I think I would just edge Ben Johnson. I think Ben Johnson, as you say, is robotic, Terminator, like robotic attitude towards.
One final thing about that run defense: of that 480 total yards they've allowed, 144 of them were Detroit. So, they only allowed the Texans to run for 38, and they allowed the Jets to run for 36. The Packers ran for 86. The Giants ran for 74. Only the Niners were the only other team this year to get over 100 yards rushing, with 102 in week two. So 480 yards and 144 of them are Ben Johnson and 102 of them are Kyle Shanahan. That's not bad going.
It's not bad at all. It's a concentrated effort as well to stop the Packers when they played. Yeah. Like, it was Packers, all they could do at the time was run the ball. So really, really interesting, yeah.
Dan, what's been your biggest surprise of the NFL season so far?
Well, it's on the other side of the game that's just happened, which was probably one of the best games of the season so far, is that Jared Goff, and I'm going to go back on this in a second, is the clear leader for MVP. Now, this was before I started looking at EPA per play, and I saw just how far ahead Lamar Jackson is than anyone else, which is interesting, and it's not clear, let me put it that way. But Jared Goff is not really putting a foot wrong so far. Whatever our expectations were for Jared Goff, I don't think we thought they'd be this high. And I think it's been incredibly impressive. I love to see it. I couldn't have worked out any better for Jared Goff, who was an afterthought in a trade 3-4 years ago. And now, like, is legitimately not just playing well for Jared Goff, just playing well for quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. And I think if someone said to me, I have a really good argument for why Jared Goff is the MVP this season, I'd be like, you had me at Jared Goff as the MVP for the season. Like, I get it. I'm now beginning to sway probably slightly more towards more Lamar Jackson winning it for a third time. But equally, no one likes people winning it for a third time. So as a result, it will probably be Jared Goff. So if the season was to end right now, that is. But yeah, love to see it.
He's thrown 10 incompletions in October.
That's
in
bonkers.
October.
And that includes drops as well. Like, that is like passes that should have been caught has been included in that.
So PFF say that he's only had one drop all year. I would argue that's not correct.
Yeah, I would argue as well.
I think if a ball hits a receiver in the hands, it's a drop.
Yeah.
So there we are. Anyway, but yeah, so all right, fine. According to PFF, 9 incompletions that were on him, but I think one of them might have been a spike.
Yeah.
But anyway, I digress. But he's playing exceptionally well. Exceptionally well.
And it's not like Alex Smith safe football he's playing either. He is playing.
No, no, no.
He's playing some pretty gutsy stuff as well. It's just good to watch. He is a great quarterback to watch. You love to see it. So
yeah, it wasn't boring because I mean I think against the Cowboys he had an average depth of target of 10 yards, which is he had average depth of target of nearly 8 yards against the Vikings. It was like, you know, it wasn't like he was nickel and diming. He's legitimately opening it up.
He's averaging 9.3 yards per attempt so far this season.
Leading the league with 9.3 yards per attempt.
Yeah. Which is bonkers, really, isn't it? That's incredibly impressive. And he was under pressure as well in that Vikings game. And he was still balling. This is Jared Goff 2.0. So, hopefully. Sorry if I've ruined your season, Jared Goff, by talking, saying wonderful, wonderful things about you now. But
I don't think the curse is relevant to you anymore. I think it's gone.
I mean, Aston Villa are currently top of the Champions League, so you might be right. So
the Bears are relevant. So, I mean,
you might be right.
It might be fine.
Definitely. Well,
right. For me, the most surprising thing of this young NFL season is that Cliff Kingsbury is actually an effective NFL offensive coordinator. I don't think anybody would have said that going into the season. And the fact that he is now coordinating one of the most exciting and effective offenses in the entire league is astounding, because it's not just Jane Daniels and his heroics that are powering the offense. It's actually a functional offense. No one could have said that Cliff Kingsbury move was a good move. But here we are.
I think we all thought it was a terrible move, in fact. Yeah. I think it was... Is there something about Dan Quinn?
No.
Do we think, like, he just seems to... Decent coordinators just seem to gravitate towards him. 50% of the time. I don't think... I think if I looked into it, actually, it wouldn't be like as... He had Carl Shanahan.
he had one.
Carl Shanahan, yeah, okay, fine. But He's done very, very well. And the best thing that he's done is the complete reverse of what he did with Kyler, which is that he's actually seems to be listening to his quarterback as to what his skill set is. So, yeah.
The set of stats that I think puts that final sort of cherry on the Cliff Kingsbury cake is 18 of 23 for 205 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 8.9 yards per attempt. That was Marcus Mariota's stat line on Sunday.
Yes.
Marcus Mariota. So, you know what? He's applied a defibrillator to Mariota, and Mariota appears to have sprung back to life like it's 2014.
Keep rocking forward like John Gruden in the TikToks now. That's my new thing.
I mean, you know, yes, we can get to Gruden later.
But I mean Cliff Kingsbury's always been good at a rushing game, and the Commanders are averaging 5.2 yards a carry. Taking out Jaden Daniels, they've still run for over 700 yards on the season so far. Adding Jaden Daniels' rushing yards back in, it's close to 1,200 yards for the season so far. So it's just a very solid base for everything that they're doing on top of that, despite having a sketchy O-line.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's incredible. Very surprising. If you bear with me, I'll just read out some of our other gentlemen's thoughts. So, Baz agrees with me. Aldo kind of agrees with you, James. What else we got? Josh agrees with me. I should have been a bit more organized. Duncan agrees with you, James. And that's you agreeing with yourself there, Dan.
I do agree with myself, yes.
All right, let's move on to question the second. Dan, what has been the biggest disappointment of the NFL season so far?
I think if the Houston Texans were to enter the playoffs right now, we would be watching a very disappointing wet fart of a game and watching them go out in the first round of playoffs. This was meant to be their season where they stepped up and became an actual challenger to the Chiefs. They have put together a team that should be a Super Bowl contender. And we just, it's not like they've been bad. We've just not seen them hit that second gear.
Yeah, I think they are. How am I best phrase this? CJ Stroud is succeeding in spite of the offense that's been put around him.
100% agree. Yeah.
The running game is terrible. It has been terrible since Mixon's been out, and even with Mixon being in, it's not been the best.
Yeah. Nico Collins went down injured. So
exactly.
Yeah.
Doesn't help. And if I can find some contested catch statistics, I'm sure those would paint a picture of how badly schemed this passing attack is as well. But I can't seem to find those at the moment without interrupting my flow. So, yeah, it's incredibly disappointing to watch this offense. I think the defense is pretty much where we expected it to be. It's got a couple of very elite elements, but the rest of it isn't particularly good. So the pass rush is very good. It's got Derek Stingley's very good, and that's about it. So that's not disappointing. Yeah, the offense was meant to be the strength, and they are still winning games, but that's just because CJ Stroud is an incredible quarterback, not because he's been helped by his coordinator.
Yeah. Totally agree.
So, yeah, he's not being helped by his coordinator, and I think they have I think they are in the early stages of Cincinnati Bengals syndrome.
Yeah.
Which, and Will's laugh tells me that he's catching on to where I'm going with this, is by the fact that basically you have this sort of prodigious pocket operator who can fit a ball through a gnat's asshole with a decent bunch of wide receivers. A shaky offensive line and a run game that can't decide whether it's a running game or a festering sore. So it is actually probably full-blown Cincinnati Bengals syndrome at this point. What was really frustrating for me watching Sunday's game was the amount of time that there were unblocked players in the pocket advancing on their quarterback. So 10 of 21 for 86 yards is not a very good stat line, but it's not a reflection of the quarterback. It's a reflection of the unnecessary level of duress that was being placed upon that quarterback. Admittedly, you've got to respond in kind, but when you have unblocked pressure coming through the A and B gap, there's not that much you can really do if it's just all the time and it's constant. And if you can't get anything going in the running game and you're forced into passing situations, you really just have to stand back there and take it. It's very interesting that you mention contested catch numbers. So, of the players that have had contested catch opportunities, only two players have a contested catch rate lower than 33%. I would consider 50% to be borderline elite on a contested catch. 50% is excellent. They currently have 7 players who are over 50% contested catch rate.
I'm nodding like that's useful on a podcast. That's crazy. That is, yeah.
But the contested attempts, it's a sum total 27 attempts across the entire team. Which, when you sort of break it down to a percentage of total passes, it's probably in line with the rest of the league. I think there is an element of that. But also, contested catch isn't just a receiver stat. It sometimes is a quarterback stat. You can have a contest. There are contested catches and there are contested catches. Like, there's a back shoulder where it's put where your guy can get it and the other guy has maybe a shot. But ultimately, your guy's always going to get it. And then there's contested ones which are just, I'm Sam Darnold. He's down there somewhere.
Yeah.
So, you know. But yeah, they have full-blown Cincinnati Bengals syndrome.
Yeah.
Yeah, sad.
Very sad.
James, what's been your biggest disappointment of the NFL season so far?
So compared to our expectations, I would actually say, oh God, I'm going to get so much crap with this. The San Francisco 49ers, ladies and gentlemen.
Yep.
The San Francisco 49ers. So we kind of saw this coming, actually, in the playoffs, really, because we start with the defense. We start with the fact that they failed to foresee that downgrading linebacker would from what was already, if you got the Niners in base in the playoffs last year, you could kind of have your way with them because you could manipulate whoever that third linebacker was going to be. And you kind of showed up that in the middle of the field, certainly in the short and intermediate areas, they weren't actually that great at defending it. That problem only got worse in the offseason.
Yep.
How much worse it made things defensively was actually quite surprising. And they started out as a team that was also objectively bad at defending the run as well. When you mix that into this, they lost CMC. They haven't had Christian McCaffrey, but they have had a perfect, adequate backup running back that stylistically fits what Kyle Shanahan wants to do. But for reasons that are beyond all human understanding, Kyle Shanahan has lent more and more into this what Robert Mays and Derek Klassen would call honorable drop back passing game, where they're asking Brock Purdy to drop back and make difficult throws in a drop back passing offense. I don't understand what has caused this philosophical shift. It can't just be the removal of Christian McCaffrey, because Shanahan's proven that he can run the scheme successfully with insert name of guy that can make one cut and go. You know, we've seen him do it with multiple other running backs where he's literally earned them, made them money by turning them into 1,300 yard rushers when they're actually guys that are probably RB2s. So for reasons I cannot fathom, he's zagged, but he's zagged the wrong way. And it's kind of, while Brock Purdy is playing probably as a passer, the best I've ever seen him play, I mean, it's just nuts. He's so good.
He's one of the most exciting quarterbacks in the league right now.
He leads the NFL in air yards per attempt.
Yeah,
you know, that's hard to do.
And yeah, I'll take back every bad word I've said about Brock Purdy.
The same. Yeah. I mean, and I have struggled with him.
Yeah,
but I take it all back. He's clearly got it, but it's to the detriment of the offense. And the problem is that because they've zagged because they feel like they've got Brandon Ayuk, George Kittle, Debo Samuel, you know, Jawan Jennings, Ronnie Bell, Ricky Pearsall, and that is enough. Well, their offensive line was never built for a high-volume drop-back passing game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole point of that offense is that it partially hides some of the less strong and less effective parts of that offensive line. Well, no longer. It doesn't any longer, does it? You mix that in with a flawed defense that isn't really performing, and you've got a very underwhelming team that I don't really think from week to week like I did last year. I think week to week this year, I do ask myself, can they beat these teams?
Mm-hmm.
Rather than thinking, oh, surely they will beat these teams. And I'm not confident they're going to right that ship very soon.
So they went from being the team last year that had numerous pieces on the field that could all do a bit of everything, and as a result put the fear of God into every team, not knowing what Kyle Juszczyk was going to do, not knowing what Christian McCaffrey was going to do, not knowing what Debo was going to do. And to a certain extent, Brandon Ayuk got involved in that as well. Juwan Jennings is a talented receiver that can do a similar thing as well. George Kittle's the best all-round tight end in the league. And you've got Trent Williams filling in the holes of an offensive line that really needs a lot of help. And this year, as you say, it feels like they're trying to get Brock Purdy going because he's probably the most talented player they've got on their offense at the moment. And that's working for them, but it's not working well enough because you've taken the Shanahan aspect out of it, which is what it's always all been about. It's always been about what Kyle Shanahan can scheme up. Like, it's almost like he's tired and wants to have a year off of like, you know what? Brock Purdy's doing a decent job. I'm going to go on holiday for a bit. You guys sort it out. And it's you're taking away the unique uniqueness of this Niners offense was what Shanahan could scheme up week to week and put the fear of God into every single defense they played against. On defense, I mean, a huge downgrade. They lost Javon Hargrave and then they lost Arik Armstead for the season, I believe. And as a result, like the interior of that off that defensive line now, which was hiding the inadequacies of their linebacking group, which I know that sounds weird when they had like Dre Greenlaw and Fred Warner. But as you say, like whoever the third guy is now going to get picked on because they don't have the guys up front to kind of separate the wheat from the chaff there. It's now we're now at a point where it's, I mean, you can only lose so much defensive talent. Ask the Legion of Boom how much defensive talent you can eventually lose before it's not the same thing anymore. Whether that is coordinators or actually on the field, eventually you have to say, we're not the same team anymore. It's like, it's triggers broom. Like, eventually it's just not the same thing anymore. And as a result, what you're actually pushing around is not any good. So, yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
It's interesting. Yeah, but I think what's most disappointing about San Francisco is not that, not... It's that they're both sides of the ball. Normally, one side of San Francisco can pick the other side up when the other side's in the doldrums. But this year, both sides of the ball seem to be in a slump, a slump that they don't seem to get out of readily.
Yeah.
And obviously, they're playing a tougher schedule. They're playing a number one schedule. So that's going to make things tougher. But you'd expect to see a team of the 49ers' pedigree to not struggle as much as they have, especially like defensively is what I think is more shocking to me. They were really good defensively last year, and this year they have looked thoroughly beatable.
Yep. I will add that I got it wrong. It's Javon Hargrave that's on IR, and it's Arik Armstead that got traded. So yeah, or got released. So yeah, I got that one wrong. But yeah, the point still remains the same. So.
No, yeah, totally does. So my biggest disappointment, I was also going to say the San Francisco 49ers. So to pivot quickly, I'm actually going to say it's the Indianapolis Colts. I thought preseason the Colts were actually going to be quite good. I thought what the head coach did last year with Gardner Minshew at quarterback was outstanding, and it can only get better with someone with some actual quarterbacking talent, right? No, clearly not. But potentially that, he just might not be ready yet for playing NFL football. And again, it's the defense where I thought they were going to be all right. It's Gus Bradley. He always gives you the 16th best defense in the league. Well, not this year. This year he's giving you the 24th best defense in the league.
He's got pictures, right? He's got pictures of someone.
Well, like, when you can consistently get the 16th best defense in the league, that's good enough for offensively minded people. Because if you've got the second best offense, having the 16th best defense means Super Bowl, baby.
Yeah.
So that's why he keeps getting work. But if when he falters and it goes down to the level it has now, and the offense is also looking kind of terrible, then you get the current Indianapolis Colts. But because the AFC South is so messed up, they still have a chance of making a wild card or even winning the division, but not based on the performances they've been putting in to date.
It's awful. I mean, so not a great wide receiving group and not a great defensive line doesn't help. But when was the last time they had a decent, like a fully decent wide receiving group? And I also think this is probably one of the... So like Alec Pierce is probably having the best season that we could hope Alec Pierce could probably have as well this year. And it's still not going to be enough for them. And the defensive line is just... I mean, that is with Latu, I think, playing better than we expected. I still think it's just kind of a bang average defensive line. They haven't got much to work with, and you're relying on Anthony Richardson suddenly becoming Patrick Mahomes when he's on the field, and you're relying on Joe Flacco suddenly becoming Anthony Richardson becoming Patrick Mahomes, like when he's on the field, and that's not how this works, and it's you can only do that for so long if you're the Indianapolis Colts, so yeah, It's depressing.
I did want to propose a theme for an episode further down the line called Elephants in the Room.
Yeah.
Where we discuss elephants in the room that no one's really comfortable mentioning, but is becoming patently obvious to everybody.
Yeah.
Are we at a point now, 214 dropbacks into Anthony Richardson's career, where we actually should be worried about the lack of sustaining, sort of, the lack of accuracy, the lack of improvement in terms of misfires and the down-to-down consistency? Because something worrying has happened to him this year. So the completion percentage is down and the average depth of target is up.
Hmm.
So I think some of this, I'm actually going to place at the door of Alec Pierce, who for some reason has suddenly decided to turn to a viable wide receiver. He's given Richardson the feeling that, you know, I can just chuck it up there and Alec is down there somewhere. But what's happened is with the average of depth of target increasing, his accuracy has dropped even further. His completion percentage is 10% lower than it was last year. He is yet to complete more than 50% of his passes this season. His yards per attempt are over nearly a yard up on last year, but he's got 6 interceptions to 3 touchdowns, which is a flip reverse of what he was achieving last year. Last year, he showed stretches of being viable with stretches of inconsistency, whereas all we're seeing now is we're seeing flashes of viability and longer stretches of inconsistency. And it bothers me that he actually seems to be regressing and we kind of gloss over it because we see the 3 or 4 special plays a game and think, oh, he must be able to put it together. Well, I would say that 214 dropbacks in, I'm still yet to see a full game.
Mm.
And I'm a little worried.
I think if you looked at his passing chart as well, the amount of incompletions you have at short to intermediate depths is what's really worrying. It's not the fact that he has a cannon and can unload these long bombs. It's to have a consistent offense, you need to be able to complete the 6 to 15 yard throws. That's like NFL quarterback bread and butter. If you can't do that, you can't be a viable NFL quarterback. That is why people like Andy Dalton stick around for so long, because he can do that.
Yeah.
He's not brilliant at it, but he can definitely do it. And that's why guys like that stick around. So if Anthony Richardson can't do that and can't be taught how to do that, then he isn't a viable NFL quarterback.
Yeah.
It's very interesting because I actually have those numbers in front of me.
I knew you would.
His deep passing is a deep passer. He ranks very, very highly indeed. Mm-hmm. You know, he's something like, it's 17 attempts with 9 completions for 266 yards.
That's good.
Yeah.
And it's actually quite good, although there is 3 picks in there. But what is most concerning, and the completion percentage is in line or above where the rest of the league is in terms of accuracy and completion percentage, if you strip out the turnovers. But at intermediate level, intermediate left, his completion percentage is 55%. Intermediate center of the field is 40%. Intermediate right is 30%.
That's and awful.
Then this is the terrifying bit. Short left, 46%. Short center, 73%, which is okay. You would expect it to be in the 80s.
Yeah.
Short right, he's right-handed, yeah? So short right is only 55%.
So these are passes to the flat then, right, most of them?
Less than 5 yards, I think, is considered short.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So
short right, short left, he is well below where you would expect.
Oh, my God, that is dreadful.
Intermediate, he is dreadful as well.
It just completely messes up their game script. Like they have no scripts for how they run a game. It's not like, okay, so what we're going to do is we need to eat the clock because we're playing, I don't know, the Chiefs, although that's a bad example this season. We want to keep hold of the ball for as long as possible. You've got Anthony Richardson. You know that he's an accurate deep passer, but he can't do anything else. What you're going to say to him is like, okay, so what you've got to do is go toe-to-toe with potentially the best quarterback in the league and we're going to take 2 minutes off the clock rather than take 7 minutes off the clock, especially if someone like Jonathan Taylor's not on the field. Like, and they've managed to hide Jonathan Taylor not being on the field by Zach Moss being on the field, but he's not there anymore, so they can't do that. It's literally Jonathan Taylor needs to be a massive part of this offense, and he's not on the field at the moment because he's not playing. And then for that to work as well, you need your defense, which is under a ton of pressure every game, because all of a sudden Anthony Richardson's throwing the ball, you know, 30, 40 yards rather than 5 to 10 yards, and like eating up a ton of clock. And either they're scoring touchdowns incredibly quickly on the back of Alec Pierce catching and running the ball, or they're not scoring touchdowns at all because they're giving the ball to the other team. And you've got a defense that's shattered on the field most of the game and bereft of a star player. I don't think I'm being unfair there. I don't look at this defense and think, you know what, that's the guy they can say, that's their centerpiece player. But they reckon you need four blue chip players for a team to succeed.
Yeah.
I can count at most two on this team, I reckon.
Blue chip?
Yeah.
Who are they then?
Jonathan Taylor and
Grover Stewart.
Yes, maybe. Maybe one then. Maybe just Jonathan Taylor. I think Jonathan Taylor is a the next level. I think you've got Michael Pittman, you've got Ryan Kelly, Quentin Nelson, but it's this one, it's not.
It's crazy as well.
Yeah.
But this is the crazy thing about Michael Pittman. Michael Pittman is exactly the wide receiver that you want a rookie quarterback to have, because in your short to intermediate, he is the guy who is meant to do all that work. He did it at USC for years, and he was incredibly effective, catching 100 passes a season, 1,200 yards. He was just like, you know, target devouring monster.
Yeah,
that's what he's for. He's there to be that guy that the quarterback can eat his vegetables with.
Yeah,
you know, if that makes sense. So I think they need to shift this mental block that Anthony Richardson has. If you can, I don't know that you can, because he's still also misfiring easy throws, and it's just I don't know how long you can sustain that.
If those coaches want to keep their jobs this year, then they strongly need to be considering this a "we're trialing him" kind of season as to whether he's going to be the quarterback for the future next year. Yeah.
Right. Some of our fellow gentlemen's biggest disappointments. Josh's biggest disappointment is the Cincinnati Bengals, as he had them winning it all this year. Baz's biggest disappointment is the Jets, which I disagree with. I think the Jets are bang on schedule.
Same.
Aldo thinks the biggest disappointments are the Patriots and Jets' supposedly elite defenses, which I tend to agree with.
Mm-hmm.
Duncan's biggest disappointment is also the Bengals. And Phil's biggest disappointment has been the Texans, which we touched on earlier. All right, next category. Who is winning the Dennis Green "They Are Who We Thought They Were" award? James, who have you got in this category?
It's the Denver Broncos offense. Of course it is. So I thought that in my realistic, pessimistic head, I've had 6-7 years of Trevor Siemian and all that jazz, yeah? So my expectation for the offense was remarkably similar to the preceding 7 years, where we have an inconsistent running game, an offensive line that on paper isn't quite as good as it should be on paper, a passing game that feels disjointed and not connected to the running game, and a quarterback that doesn't seem to be able to get his shit together.
Mm.
And here we are. That's where we are. So what really concerns me about the Denver offense is that actually I can see the architecture of the offense is fine. I can see that the passing game is actually creating throws that are there. That you know, if they were presented to you and you were an NFL quarterback with an ounce of sense, you would throw some of those throws that are further downfield and just do it. For whatever reason, Bo Nix does not do that. Bo Nix dances to his own tune. He doesn't just dance to his own tune in terms of the throws he chooses to turn down. He dances to his own tune in terms of where he likes to settle in the pocket at the bottom of his drops. I swear to God, if he drifts into pressure one more time, I'm going to kill myself. Or if he fades away onto his back foot as he releases the ball from his sweaty little palm, I swear I'm going to puncture his eyeballs with a pencil. Okay? And the next time that he chooses not to take an intermediate completion downfield, break from the pocket early and run for 9 yards and be applauded for it, I might just burst into tears.
Yeah, it's weird that Justin Fields gets criticised for that. And he's way better at doing that.
You say that. I would rather have Justin Fields.
I think you should. I think Justin Fields is a better quarterback. That pass he made in between two open receivers, by the way, that is exactly me when I get stressed. Like, if I'm under any kind of pressure and I've got to do something either to the left or the right, I will immediately do something directly down the middle, because that for me is how I handle things badly. But on the plus side, the defense is good.
It is, and it's allowing me to not have a nervous breakdown, which is really nice. And we've discussed how I feel about the defense and our pass rush and how it is better than some of its parts.
Yeah.
And how we do have the best corner in football.
Definitely.
And anybody who disagrees with me is an idiot.
Second best corner in football.
But whatever.
No, you can't say that this season.
Oh, can I not?
Actually, to be fair. But I think
we can get into some stats if you want, Will.
All right.
But you know how you watch quarterbacks, right? And yeah, after a few games you think, oh, this is just what you are, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh God, this thing that's wrong with you isn't the kind of thing that gets better.
Do you know what I admire, James? I
think that's where we are with Bo.
I admire that you can see that, because I can never see that. I'm always like, he might get better. It might work out. Come on, Mitch / Justin / Jay / Mike Glennon / whoever it is that's ever suited up for the Chicago Bears in the last 20 years. He might get better.
But with the disappointment, I've developed a checklist.
Yeah. Okay.
For quarterbacks, that, you know, I will believe in the quarterbacks if they can do X. First thing I ask myself is, am I making too many excuses? If the answer is no, then I go to the next thing on my checklist. You know, is their footwork funky? If the answer is yes, is it repeatable and is it stopping them from throwing accurately? If the answer is no, it's not stopping them, crack on. Next thing I ask myself is, are they afraid to throw it in the middle of the field more than 10 to 15 yards? If the answer is no, they're not afraid, but they're chucking picks, but they keep having a go and they're getting progressively better, tick, I still tick, okay? And are you throwing the ball deep down the field with confidence and with a degree of accuracy and touch? If I could tick that, boom. And when you're heated up under pressure, do you look like you're going to shit your pants? If the answer is yes, probably not. If the answer is no, tick the box and we move on. Which is why Spencer Rattler, for me, ticks more boxes than my quarterback. Because Spencer Rattler appears to have a short memory.
Mm-hmm.
Bo just gets angry. He gets angry at his coach when he gets called out on the sideline for making a mistake. Do you know what, Bo? You might want to listen to Sean.
Yeah, that's how you have a very short career as well. Like, if you decide to get mad at Sean Payton, then your career won't last long. That's not ideal. But yeah,
he called the conversation they had on the sideline the other week. What was it? Sean Payton said there's a touch of the Ferris Bueller to him.
Yeah,
which
yeah,
I think is Sean Payton's way of saying he needs to shut up.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, but yeah, I don't think Ferris Bueller would have been able to turn in better performances. So yeah,
no,
maybe that's true. But yeah, the Denver Broncos offense, it's disjointed, but it's largely the fault of the quarterback. Sorry.
Yeah.
Right. Dan, who's winning your Dennis Green, they are who we thought they were, award?
I suppose I should feel bad that he hurt his Achilles this week, but I don't. But it's Deshaun Watson. Every single warning sign about this season was there last season. And the Browns have been given, I wouldn't say this about any other player in the league, the Browns have been given the ultimate get out of jail free card now by him being now out for the season. And it's mind-boggling that he lasted this long. You know what? Maybe he isn't who we thought he was. Maybe he's actually managed to be worse. And that took some doing, because I didn't have any expectations this season. I thought we saw enough of him last season to know exactly what he was, and that you didn't need to bring him in. I mean, I just assumed that the reason you bring in someone like Jameis, who's a vaguely competent backup, or the reason you brought in Flacco last year, is because you know that your quarterback can't string wins together and can't string a decent drive together. And that's clearly not the case. And it feels like, judging by the rumors of like Myles Garrett now being potentially shopped around, which is an interesting one, that they are now at a point where it's like, we're kind of giving up on the season already. But really, for me, the season's just getting started. Let's see if Jameis can at least throw more touchdowns than interceptions. 50-50 chance, really, in my mind.
I think
he'll throw just as many touchdowns as interceptions, which is the problem.
Yeah, true.
The most portentous warning sign of all was when he came back from his time away, should we say.
Yep.
And the thing about him that had changed dramatically as a player was, I remember Deshaun Watson pre-2020 being a player that wasn't perfect, but had some guts to him, and had some creativity, and had some wherewithal with him to create something out of nothing. That player's dead.
Yeah.
That player's gone. That player never returned.
No.
And it absolutely never showed up on the field, not once. What you got was a ghost.
The
and
signature.
I'm willing to bet that his experience off the field has absolutely robbed him of any confidence he ever had.
Yeah. And the signature moment of, I think, the Browns' 2024 season so far has been when Stefanski wanted to go for it on fourth down and Deshaun Watson was already walking off the field.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That says everything you need to know for me. That the Deshaun Watson of old wouldn't have done that.
No.
But we'll see what Jameis does, because Jameis came out like hugely defending Deshaun Watson this week, didn't he? So,
well, you know. Yeah. Similar pasts and that.
Yep.
But it's like there's two questions, and a lot of people confuse these questions and think they're the same thing. The question that people ask is, how do you cut Deshaun Watson? Well, that is a hard question to answer. But then how do you bench Deshaun Watson? Well, benching him is easy.
Yes.
You just have a guy on the bench that's making $200 million. You just bench him.
Yes.
If you don't bench him, you can't tell the other 52 players on the roster and the 20 guys on the practice squad that your organization is a meritocracy based on earning your spot on the team. You can't do that.
I think about 27 other teams in the league could do that. I think if you're the Cleveland Browns, who have fans turning up to games with the list of names of quarterbacks on the backs of their jersey that go longer than their jerseys, then I think you struggle to bench the guy that you've traded a ton of picks for and are paying an absolute fortune for, because you're too scared that after alienating 50% of your fan base anyway, because you picked him up in the first place, that you'll alienate the other 50% because it turns out that that was actually a really bad move again. So I think that they are in a very sticky situation, and good luck, guys, I suppose. I don't know. I don't care. I went from having a certain amount of respect for the plucky little upstart Cleveland Browns and to not caring about anything that happens to that franchise at all in any way, shape, or form, because they jumped
in. I used to wish them every success in the world.
Yeah.
Now I don't care.
Yeah, that's exactly how I feel. And if you're a Browns fan, fair play, more power to you. If you're still a Browns fan, if you change your team afterwards, also more power to you. It doesn't matter. Whatever happens is they did that in your name. And I would be very annoyed if my team did that.
Yeah. Yes. Anyway, let's move on, as that's thoroughly depressing.
Sorry.
they are who we thought they were award goes to the Philadelphia Eagles. Because, not to blow my own trumpet too hard, I thought that this team was going to be successful in spite of its coaching staff, which is exactly where this Philadelphia Eagles team appears to be. You have a vibes-based coach who is yelling at fans after a four-point win against potentially one of the worst teams in the league. And this is now a pattern for this particular head coach. He has form in this particular area. I wasn't particularly sold on Kellen Moore being a great offensive coordinator. He certainly hasn't blended what the Eagles were doing previously with what he likes to do. Without their running back, I don't think this offense would be much of anything at the moment, which is an astounding achievement considering how much talent that offense has got. So, yeah, I thought this was going to happen to the Eagles, that they were going to win a lot of games because they have a talented roster and not get much further because their coaching staff isn't very good.
So the last press conference he did was after the Cleveland. Do you know where I'm going with this?
Is this the human shield?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, right? That's what I was about to say. So it's not just me that thinks that then. Okay, cool. Yeah.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
He's a dickhead, isn't he?
But for listeners that don't know what you're referring to, can you describe what he does?
So after Nick Sirianni was jawing at what I assumed was Cleveland Browns fans, but was actually turns out to be Philadelphia Eagles fans. they won the game. He then went into his press conference with his entire family sitting on his lap, essentially, in a kind of effort to say, look, guys, not while the family's here. Come on. It's like, you brought them, dude. Like, you brought them in here. Just. And he is so unlikable. It is crazy. He takes no kind of ownership of any kinds of mistakes he makes. And then he is the definition of that meme of the guy in third place who's like shouting and screaming, and the guys in first and second place are there just like quietly getting on with it.
Yeah.
He is so irritating. And if I was an Eagles fan, I'd be so embarrassed, because it's not like they're running away with the NFC East. So, like, yeah, oh, yeah. I agree. The Eagles.
So, USA Today journalist, I think Michael D. Sykes, described it perfectly. This truly is, folks, I hate to say it, the moment that Nick Sirianni has officially jumped the shark. For those of you who've ever watched Happy Days, the shark jumping moment where Fonzie water skis over a shark in season 5 is considered to be the moment where it dies as a piece of sitcom and becomes a ridiculous self-parody.
Yeah, like loads of TV series jump the shark, and it's generally when something ridiculous happens, and now the Eagles have also done that, yeah.
Yeah. Will said it brilliantly. He's a vibes-based head coach.
But the problem with this
vibes-based head coach, there's no one more likely to sabotage said vibe than the head coach, which is the great tragedy of it all.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Damn it.
So, going through some other gentlemen's awards, Josh thinks the Dennis Green Award should go to the Jets, and I kind of agree. Baz thinks it should go to the Jags because they are always a bad franchise. Can't agree with that. Sorry, can't disagree with that.
No.
the Dennis Green Award for Alan goes to the Lions. Yeah, we all thought they were going to be good at the beginning of the season. Turns out they are. Duncan has the Oakland Raiders. I thought the Oakland Raiders were going to be a little bit better than this, but there you go.
Same.
And Phil has gone with Derrick Henry. Oh, no. Did he?
No.
No, he did. Derrick Henry.
Oh.
As the... They are who we thought they were. Fair enough. So, our next category is the I'm Him Award. I can't remember who I went to last time, so I'm going to go with Dan. Dan, who's your I'm Him award winner. Well,
it's nice to carry on what Phil just said, because the I'm Him award is King Henry. And he, you know, when you something exciting happens and you're like, oh, I hope it's going to be good, and then it ultimately turns out to be a disappointment. That didn't happen here, because Derrick Henry joined the Baltimore Ravens and everything we wanted it to be was what it became. And it's wonderful, and I love it, and I love watching him play for the Ravens. I love him and Lamar on the same team is just a beautiful thing to watch. And Derrick Henry is on schedule for, what, 2,100 yards this season at the age of 30, which is meant to be like when running backs throw themselves in the tar pit. So, like, it's crazy to watch. It's this, in my opinion, and it probably was about 3 seasons ago, to be honest with you, might be Derrick Henry's Hall of Fame season. It was way sooner than this, to be honest. But like, this might be the one that we look back at and go, this is why he's a nailed on Hall of Famer, because he did this. Yeah, I love watching it. He's on the right team. And Todd Monken must just be going, I could do so much with this guy and Lamar. Who knows? Mark Andrews is now catching passes as well and everything. So, you know, it could be anything. Lots can happen. So, yeah. I love watching Derrick Henry. Yeah.
The fact that he's still performing at such a high level, despite possibly having the most tread worn off the tires of any running back in the league. He was run into the dirt in Tennessee. Often having 350 carries a year for multiple years. That breaks most running backs, but not Derrick. He's still performing at an incredibly high level. So, yeah, all power to him.
I do not get how he's still so quick and yet so big. Like, he has got everything going for him. It's crazy.
My advice to you is watch any YouTube video of Derrick Henry's leg day. It's not even like a normal NFL running back's leg day.
I can imagine.
It's monumentally insane. It's remarkable. So,
So, yeah, Derrick Henry.
James, who have you got winning the I'm Him award?
It's very simple. It's Justin Jefferson, and I don't have to explain why.
No, fair enough.
Because
let's move
he
on.
He is him.
All right, we shall move on then. I'm going to pick the I'm Him award for the player currently leading the NFL in sacks. He weighs 340 pounds. He plays nose tackle, and he's Dexter Lawrence. In fact, he is so good, he is pretty much the entire of that New York Giants defense. He is the closest thing to Aaron Donald we've had since Aaron Donald retired. Admittedly, that wasn't that long ago, but Dexter Lawrence is just a machine, a offensive line destroying machine. And the fact that he leads the NFL in sacks is otherworldly. He's otherworldly good.
He really is. I love him.
It's been confirmed he's also the heaviest player to ever record 9 sacks.
Amazing.
Yeah, 340. No one over 330 pounds has ever recorded more than 9 sacks.
It's crazy.
Apparently. Which is hilarious.
Absolutely bonkers.
And he's on course for how many then? I would make it 20-ish.
It's pretty impressive, isn't it? Yeah, he's fun to watch as well. That's the other thing.
And he's all by himself.
He is. He is very much all by himself. Yeah, he is a lot of fun to watch.
Some of our other gentlemen have said, agreed with you, James. Josh agrees with you that Justin Jefferson is the I Am Him award. Baz thinks it's Goff, who we talked about earlier. Alan thinks it's Brian Thomas Jr., arguably the best rookie wide receiver, and that's saying something. Yep, fair enough. Shame he plays for a terrible, terrible football team. Seaweed Duncan says it's Brian Robinson Jr. Maybe I'm not sure about that. And Phil Knuckles goes with the homer pick of Geno Mother Flipping Smith. But Fair enough. Gino is playing some really nice football.
He's
to
a
be
lot
fair.
Of fun to watch. Yeah, I agree. They really well the other night. Yeah.
Okay, so let's move on. James, who do you have, or what do you have as the biggest overreaction to this young NFL season?
Anyone who at any point claims that the sky is falling in Kansas City, you are.
Yes.
It doesn't actually matter. I tell you now, I watched the game I watched against the Niners, and I am now convinced that there's very little on this earth that can beat the Kansas City Chiefs in their present form. The only people that can beat the Kansas City Chiefs in their present form is the Kansas City Chiefs. That said, they do need to do something about their receiving group or their approach on offense, because it's becoming patently obvious now that Travis Kelce is falling off a cliff. Again, another elephant in the room. And that Xavier Worthy is not a fully formed wide receiver by any stretch. And that if they were to lose one more running back, it could all come apart. Also, their tackle play is not amazing, but Spags is on fire. The defense, again, is even though it has Chris Jones, still, particularly the secondary, playing greater than the sum of its parts. The defense is just scheming up so absolutely beautifully, and the offense is finding ways to get it done. So go ahead. Claim that the sky is falling. Claim that they are the worst Chiefs offense you have ever seen. I guarantee you that they are going to be there in that championship game, and most likely there in that Super Bowl.
We did this last year too.
Mm-hmm.
We underestimated them last year because they were playing boring football, and they're playing boring football again this year. But do you know what they did last year? They won a Super Bowl. Do you know what other teams won a Super Bowl? It was just them. They're the only team that won a Super Bowl, because that's how it works. Like, I'm rooting for the Kansas City Chiefs, because they're the only team now that can potentially undo the Dolphins record. So
I don't care about this discussion about Pat Mahomes having more picks than touchdowns. Who else but Pat Mahomes finishes a game like that?
And they did. I mean, everyone did this for years with Tom Brady as well.
Yeah.
Maybe he's not as good as we thought he was because he lost a game. Stop Tom Brady. Like it's Patrick Mahomes. Like, believe your eyes, because you've seen him do the crazy things. No, it winds me up too. I completely agree.
To quote Thanos, fear it, run from it. You can't escape it.
100%. Unlike him. But he can escape. It, whatever it is in this situation, but he death.
Thanos is talking about death. I'm talking about the Chiefs.
Yeah, I think they might not be fun to watch, but they're still functional. They're still doing what they need to do, and they're probably going to get Cooper Kupp by the looks of things. So
you're right that they're dull, but they are insanely efficient. They're efficient in the way that the Dallas Cowboys want to be.
Yeah.
It's just, we need 8 yards. We'll get 8 yards. We need 7 yards. Okay, we'll get 7 yards. We need 12 yards. All right, we'll get 12 yards. They're the very definition of offensive efficiency.
Yeah.
But you've not generated any big plays. Yeah, but we generate a big score.
It's an entire section of the playbook. They've not unsheathed until the playoffs. So, yeah.
Oh, look, they've taken 9 minutes off the clock.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's put that defense back on the field.
Yeah,
the one that's covered in blood and bruises. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
They're sick and tired of Joe Tooney and Creed Humphrey crushing them.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, biggest lie.
Biggest overreaction. Was that your pick as well, Dan? Biggest overreaction.
No, my biggest overreaction. I'm gonna go. I'm being slightly facetious with this one. The Chicago Bears, the biggest overreaction, because they haven't faced any real talent so far. And whilst I am inclined to agree with that, in the sense that the last three games, They have indeed played three terrible, terrible teams, or more, one of them is the Rams, but like it's still impressive to watch, but also maybe we should pump the brakes just a little bit.
Dan, is anybody claiming that they're capable of winning the Super Bowl?
No one.
No. Okay. Is anybody claiming that they're absolutely definitely going to win a playoff game?
No one, no.
No. So
I'm scared, James.
Is actually kind of in line with how well they've done.
Yes. That's a really good point. That's a really good way of putting it. Like,
so stop whining.
All right, I'm not whining. I'm just scared. Okay. I don't want. Okay, I like this. I'm enjoying this. Okay. So yeah.
They're just enjoying it.
I'm trying really hard, but every time I've enjoyed things just before, it always goes wrong. So
that's the nature of life. Just embrace it while it happens. Live for the moment and don't fear the future. Otherwise, you'll never truly live.
Do you know the last time anyone watched a decent Chicago Bears quarterback? No one does.
Sid Luckman.
Exactly. There we go. That's Sid Luckman. 50s. Silly me.
There you are.
We thought Jim McMahon was good.
I think there was a four-week stretch of Jay Cutler as well.
Jay Cutler and Anthony Richardson, they share like a, that there are similarities there, I think, but yeah, it's not who you'd want to be compared to, I suppose, but yeah. Sorry, yeah, that's it. Yeah, Chicago Bears. Maybe I'm overreacting to the overreaction.
So my overreaction was that the Baltimore Ravens have messed up their season by starting 0-2. The Baltimore Ravens are potentially the best team in the entire league. And just because they lost very narrowly to the hyper-efficient Chiefs team, and had their tight end been wearing a white pair of shoes instead of a black pair of shoes, they still might have won that game. And then somehow forgot how to play football against the Las Vegas Raiders, then they'd be undefeated at this point. But people were saying after week two that there's something wrong in Baltimore. Well, they've been proved. A massive overreaction.
How many MVPs does Lamar have to win before people stop calling him a running back? Like,
well, those people are idiots.
They really are. It's so insane. It's insane to me now.
He's not a pocket passing quarterback.
No,
but he's still an excellent quarterback.
Yeah, he absolutely is.
And he's making another. He's, the only thing that's keeping him from winning another MVP is the fact that he's already won two MVPs.
Yeah.
But yeah, people who thought that there was a problem in Baltimore are overreacting to the max.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right. Some of our other gentlemen, biggest overreaction so far from Josh is Dak shouldn't have been paid. Yeah, Dak's not the problem in Cowboy land. Bass agrees with... Oh, and Bass says that the biggest overreaction was judging Caleb on the first few weeks. Aldo agrees with Bass. Caleb's early struggles. Duncan, biggest overreaction that the Packers would struggle without Jordan Love. Yeah, we all proved wrong on that front very quickly. And Phil agrees with you, James, that the biggest overreaction is the Chiefs' struggles. So our next award is the biggest lie so far. James, what have you got as the biggest lie so far?
So week one, the New Orleans Saints totted out in a pair of high heels and a tight-fitting evening dress, doled up to the nines. And by week three, they ended up looking like Doc Cotton lying in a gutter. The facade just fell away. I think it was a heady cocktail of them being rumbled early, in terms of how one-dimensional their approach was. Teams realised that as soon as they could sort of shut down that running game, that they could shut everything down. Derek Carr started to regress into a shell of himself, and then Mr. Injury Bug started to strike as well. They started losing pieces on the offensive line. Alvin Kamara has been playing banged up on top of getting older. They've lost so many players now that it's almost comical. They've just lost Alonso Taylor, who actually is objectively probably the best defensive back they've had playing this year. They have a young quarterback in Spencer Rattler who shows promise, but is in a situation where I don't think any rookie quarterback could possibly win. They are currently operating on an offense where Alvin Kamara has the most receptions on the team. Rashid Shaheed has the most receiving yards on the team. They've rendered Chris Olave into an afterthought as the third, de facto third receiver. They have no down-to-down efficiency. And Spencer Rattler is just standing back there under constant pressure, throwing to just desperately looking for someone to throw to in a no-win situation. And the whole team just appears to be imploding. Which is a real shame, isn't it, Will?
Oh, heart bleeds for them. but having watching, I can't remember who they played, but so watching them against Denver, it was clear that that defense just gave up.
Yeah.
Much the same way they did against Tampa Bay, they just gave up.
You'd have to. To give up 33 points to that offense.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. and if you're the defensive minded head coach, this defense is made in your image, and you cannot. There are plenty of losing head coaches whose teams still play hard for them every single day. And if that's not happening in New Orleans, then you've got to figure that Dennis Allen is next on the chopping block. Because it's one thing to be bad at football, it's another thing to give up when you're not that bad. Because the Saints defense isn't that bad still. Earlier on this season, they were still giving people lots of trouble, even when their offense was found out. They should be a much better unit than they actually are. So that's, yeah. I agree that the lie was that this was a team that was going to trouble the NFC South, because as soon as their center and their guard left the game and we found out that Taysom Hill was the Jar Jar Binks key to all of this.
That's true. That's 100% true. I've got some thoughts, but I've got another. I've got them in another category, so I'll save mine.
We'll keep those thoughts till later then. Yeah. So Dan, who have you got in this category?
Right, hear me out, because I answer these differently from everyone else, apparently, because I don't know how to read questions properly. And that is, so the biggest lie, in my opinion, is like this, the belief that something that is happening is the final product, is like the final thought of there are no flaws in this whatsoever. And for me, and hear me out, it's the Washington football team, and I refuse to call them Commanders because football team is so much a better name. What is happening within Washington is wonderful. It's enjoyable to watch. It is also not sustainable, in my opinion. Now, I've said this about Patrick Mahomes before, so I'm willing to potentially eat just helpings and helpings and helpings of humble pie. But the defense isn't keeping them in games unless their offense is doing something spectacular at the moment. And I think that isn't necessarily sustainable. Now, is it sustainable in the NFC East where no one else seems to want to win it? Potentially. Yeah, absolutely. But I don't... Jaden Daniels playing excellently. The offense is playing excellent football. The defense is a disappointment, in my opinion. And it's getting covered over by the fact that what the offense is doing is exceptional.
Yes.
So it's not a lie, it's just a cover up. But yeah.
I think you're a little hard on the defense. The defense performed really well against the Browns. and they were really good against the Panthers as well.
And I know I'm setting myself up for a massive fall when they play the Chicago Bears next week. And Caleb Williams is sacked 8 times or something like that. But it's
not gonna happen. So, I think you're right.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. So here's some stats on the Washington defense. They're allowing 4.9 yards per attempt, which is fine because they're also averaging, this is rushing, by the way, averaging 5.2 yards per attempt rushing. So that's great. You can sustain that. They've allowed 12 passing touchdowns, but that's okay because they are the number one point scoring offense in the league. And generally, it kind of evens out the fact that they're very good at not letting offenses come on the field. And that is their best. All right, Will. That's their best.
It's definitely an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty.
It's disgusting. And funny. But it's also funny, so I'll allow it.
So their average drive is 3 minutes, 27 seconds, which is number one in the league. And the average drive allowed is 3 minutes and 7 seconds, which is 29th in the league. So, like, I suppose that doesn't add up then. Whatever. Then the defense isn't doing that great, okay? That I have in front of me that they're not. The offense is doing a very good job of not allowing offenses on the field, which is causing problems.
It's because they're so good in the red zone all of a sudden. The first 3 weeks, they weren't.
Yeah.
They weren't good at scoring touchdowns, but they were good at scoring field goals. And now they've got good at scoring touchdowns in the red zone, which is why the two length of drive stats seem quite similar.
Yeah.
But obviously, they're better than league average at scoring
on
those long drives. So I think that's the key differentiator. And that's
sustainable.
A good problem to have. It's not sustainable, no. But I mean, they lead the league in rushing touchdowns for a start.
Yeah.
Which 14.
It's insane.
Which is, at this point, you know, they're on track for what, 34 rushing touchdowns?
Yeah.
Which I'm not sure if that's a record, but I think it would be pretty close.
In
the modern era, anyway.
Yeah.
But their defense is not good. You're absolutely right. And I look at that secondary and I'm like, oh my God, there's a reason you keep playing cover two. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Because you don't want your corners turning and running with anyone.
I do think some people are getting a bit overhyped about how good the offense is, and it is very good.
Mm.
And it's also buoyed by the fact that no one considered this to be a good Commanders team in any sense of the word. And it's turned out to be way better than we expected it to be. But that doesn't mean that they're suddenly like a Super Bowl contender or even going to trouble anybody in the playoffs, because when they've come up against decent opposition this year, they haven't been able to put them away. But that doesn't stop it's one of the stories of the year. It's great fun all around, but I kind of agree with you that I think people are getting a little over their skis with how much they're expecting of this Commanders team. They're going to make the playoffs because the NFC East is terrible.
Mm.
And then that they're going to be one and done. But that's a great, considering where we thought they were going to be, that's a fantastic season. They've got a lot that they can build on going into future seasons. They found their quarterback of the future. It's everything you could have wanted as a Commanders fan going into this year, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree.
They've also got to play the NFC South this year, which means they're almost certainly going to win at least three games.
Yeah.
From them.
Yeah, totally agree.
So, I just had what mine was, and I've totally blanked on what it was going to be. My biggest lie. Come on, Will. You can remember this.
You got this, Will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I don't.
You don't?
I can't remember what it was at all.
That makes me sad.
Well, but something happened in week three, and I was going to talk about it. I don't know what it was anymore.
But you can keep vamping for the time being. We'll eventually get there, I'm sure.
Yeah, so. I'm sure we will. Sure we will. I remembered what it was.
There you go.
The biggest lie was that Bryce Young was everything that was wrong with the Carolina Panthers.
Turns out he's just one thing.
It turns out he was among the many things that were wrong with the Carolina Panthers.
This is true.
My God, that game they played against the Marcus Mariota-led Washington Commanders, ugly. Like, that the pick, how do you throw a pick six on a screen?
By simply failing to see the player.
But it's a screen.
You just don't see them.
Jumping the route, yeah? Like, yeah, it's...
sometimes that quarterbacks will throw it blind.
Mm. Yeah, well, clearly.
And assume. Yeah, but that's it. Sometimes quarterbacks are told to just throw it blind.
True. Yeah. True. Like,
but that's mostly perimeter screens where you're just told to take the snap, turn, and throw it blind.
Mm.
Yeah. But not. Yeah. But yeah. Was it Dante Fowler who got the pick six?
I think so.
Mm.
How do you miss Dante Fowler, though?
Yeah, he's a huge human being.
It must be something they saw on tape, though, right? It must be just be like, we know that this is coming at some point. Be prepared for this. Saw it on tape.
Andy Dalton does a massive blink. When Andy Dalton throws screen passes, he does a massive triple blink.
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
Anyway.
Blinks directly at Dante Fowler. Yeah. Yeah.
So the Panthers had that one win against an equally terrible team. And I've just reverted back to type. The only thing that they can do with any sort of regularity is run the ball. Mm-hmm. When they get into game situations where they can no longer run the ball because they're so far behind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this, I had some high hopes of the Panthers that they were going to be a scrappy team that, you know, clawed their way to four or five wins, but they look, well, among the worst teams in the league.
Yeah.
It's that thing where
restaurant owner, Carolina.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, David Tepper, yeah, good Lord. Restraining orders all over the place for him. Definitely. But it's that thing, if you have an offense that can only really run the ball well, you have to be able to score running the ball. Mm.
Yeah.
The game flow to allow you to continue to run the ball. So I would expect that they are last in the league in rushing attempts after the first quarter.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So our other gentlemen have said that Josh has said the biggest lie is that the wheels are about to come off the Vikings bandwagon. Nope, the Vikings still look really good and played game of the year potentially so far last weekend. Baz says the biggest lie so far has been the Cowboys and that it's 2017 and putting the band back together and that's going to be successful. The biggest lie so far is the Jets would be contenders. Again, I would say that people who said that do not know how to evaluate offensive lines.
Yeah.
Duncan said that the biggest lie so far is the Cowboys. And Phil says that the biggest lie has been the Saints. Ha 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 ha.
Talking about not being able to evaluate offensive lines, that does include the Jets not being able to evaluate their own offensive line.
That is true. I'm going to skip over this next question. It would have been teams who should already be looking to the draft. It's a bit, while that's funny in week one, it's a bit mean in week seven. So we'll skip over to the things we have enjoyed the most so far this season.
Lovely question.
Yeah. Daniel, what have you enjoyed so far this season?
I got to watch my team dominate another team, which doesn't really happen very often. I got to do it in person, sitting next to an 80-year-old lady who was having the time of her life, who'd flown all the way from Chicago. And she was... I'm going to go into detail on this, because this was... I randomly, whilst drunk on a Saturday night, decided, you know what? I am going to go to the game. Woke up the next morning, had half a kebab there and ticket to the Bears game at Tottenham. So I went... I had a wonderful time, and I was in the nosebleeds with this lady who'd flown all the way from Chicago. She is a youth basketball coach. Her husband was a referee for college football, so she knew everything. She was incredible because she'd learned it all from her husband, and she hung around with other referees. And then she was like, yeah, I used to train with one of the Chicago Bears. I'm like, oh, really? Which one? She goes, oh, Gary Fensick. I'm like, oh, you mean the guy that means that if it does, the 46 defense doesn't work without Gary Fensick? Yeah, him. Yeah. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. She was loud. She was abrasive. She was everything I wanted with an 80-year-old lady. She might not have been 80. She might have been in 70s. I feel bad now. But like, and then about halfway through, she asked me what the weed scene like is in like in London, whether it's the same as Amsterdam. And I said, I don't really know. I'm afraid. So anyway, the thing I've enjoyed this most this year is losing my voice singing the Chicago Bears fight song because we got to sing it so often. So yeah.
A question about that game.
Yeah.
Is jagging as dramatically entertaining in person as it is on a screen?
I'm a bad person, James. There was a Jags fan who was very spirited when they scored that field goal to start the game.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I might have said some harsh things in his direction about how they don't have any fans or a stadium. So it was something maybe, and maybe some less than kind words about his hairline. But like, it's just, he was winding me up. I felt bad for him in the end, so I shut up. So yeah. Like when we thought we were going to win by like one touchdown, we'd probably let them back in and they'd win the game because that's what I'm used to. I was being a bit more aggressive, but yeah. It was a good game.
Is it spectacular? Is it spectacular in person when they jag?
I was watching it like, so to put it into perspective, I was next to the kind of like end all 22 camera.
Oh, wow.
That's how far up I was and that's how far back I was. Was like five rows to my right. Five seats to my right, even. It is mind-boggling how bad they are. They give up so much space. Trevor Lawrence just looks lost. Like, everything seems to be... They seem to be playing the game at a different speed to the Chicago Bears. On a much slower speed, that is. And it doesn't seem to be... And the Bears gave him chances
Everything
as well.
Everything seems, yeah.
Watching
it on the screen, it looks like they make things hard for themselves.
Absolutely.
Sorry.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. Although then they went and dominated the Patriots this week, but even that, they looked like they were going to lose. So, yeah.
And they nearly went the Patriots back into that.
They did, yes. This is true, yeah. It's very true. But yeah, that was fun. That has been the most enjoyable part of my season, so yeah.
James, what have you really enjoyed so far this season?
The top three quarterback picks in the draft looking either as good or much better than we thought. It's been really good to see Caleb Williams have the kind of rookie journey that we would probably have expected and how well that seems to be going at the moment. We look at Jaden Daniels' mercurial start to the year. Yeah. Then I look at Drake May coming in and looking like he absolutely belongs on an NFL field surrounded by a bunch of losers. He's playing objectively well on a team that is objectively awful.
Yeah.
And I think that all three teams should feel really, really bloody chuffed that they seem to have picked good players at a position that is notoriously difficult to pick for.
Yeah.
And we've had classes like this before. We've had them all be bums.
Yeah.
But we appear to have hit on at least three that seem to be all right. And from what we've seen of JJ McCarthy in preseason, he seems to be somebody who seems to be on the right track as well. So I think we can feel pretty good about those guys. I'm not going to mention the other two. It's not worth it. But also, just the fact that also the sixth quarterback picked in this process seems to be somebody who is worth taking an extended look at as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally agree.
All right. I'm just going to start reading some statistics for the thing I have enjoyed most so far this season. Bucky Irving, 14 attempts, 81 yards, one touchdown, 1.9 yards attempt before contact, 3.9 yards an attempt after contact, two broken tackles. Sean Tucker, 14 attempts, 136 yards, 101 yards before contact, a touchdown, and he had 2.5 yards per attempt after contact. Tampa Bay ran for 277 yards against the New Orleans Saints, and it was effing glorious, considering how terrible our rushing attack had been all season, for Tampa Bay to start shooting themselves in the foot in the second quarter, and then to realize that the Saints couldn't stop any sort of rush, and us just to pile on the pain was glorious. Wonderful. More, please. Well, it's going to have to be more, please, after this weekend.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Totally agree.
Things that other gentlemen have enjoyed. Josh enjoyed the Lions. They're fun to watch. Baz has also enjoyed watching the Lions. Alan agrees with you. The rookie QBs looking like decent quarterbacks. Duncan has enjoyed Jared Goff, Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield, and Geno Smith. And Phil has enjoyed nothing. He didn't answer that question.
Because he's a moody goth.
Yeah. Listen to the Black Parade on repeat.
It's not a bad album. Anyway.
Yeah, it's the second best My Chemical Romance album.
It is. You're absolutely right.
Danger Days is the better one.
So, final question for the podcast. What is the
Will
thing...
looks disgusted.
I just don't like My Chemical Romance.
It's fine. It's okay. It's fine.
What's the thing that we have enjoyed laughing at the most? James, what have you enjoyed laughing at the most?
The not just the Dallas Cowboys, but Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones. So not only the ridiculous collapsicino that has been the Dallas Cowboys, same old double mug bullshit on defense and same old dumb face bullshit on offense, but it's also the billionaire I pay you guys to report on the team bullshit that Jerry Jones pulled in a radio interview when presenter from 1053 The Fan deigned to ask him difficult questions, and he responded with, "I don't pay you to ask me these questions. I pay you to ask me nicer questions." He then went to the owners' meeting and made it abundantly clear that he wouldn't be speaking to any journalists and advertised the fact when he entered the meeting, only to be accosted as he left by Diana Rossini, who'd been hiding around the back. And he then promptly stopped for an interview with Diana Rossini, in which he led with, "I wasn't going to do any interviews today, and here's why." So, Dallas Cowboys and Jerry Jones, you are the gift that keeps giving, because you just can't get out of your own way. And long may this continue.
Yep. Glorious. Daniel, what have you enjoyed laughing at the most so far this season?
Cap is a myth, bros.
Cap is a myth, bros.
Just not so much just the Saints, but them in particular. Anyone for the last... And I've played the long game with this one. Okay. Like anyone for the last 10 years that said the cap is a myth, do one. All right. Because the Saints are in hell right now because of this. To put it into perspective, I can go to 2028 because I'm on my favorite page. Like it's the New Orleans Saints page on overthecap.com because it is just hilarious.
It's totally open in your browser, isn't it? It's
yeah, pretty open. Much. Yeah. That it's, like, okay, so 2027, actually, let's have a look. See if they've still got in the books there. Yeah, Cameron Jordan. If they cut Cameron Jordan, if Cameron Jordan's still playing in 2027 and they cut him, they make a dead cap, a loss of $7.3 million in 2027. Okay. Alvin Kamara, same again, $1.9 million. Next year, if Alvin Kamara is on this team, his cap number is $29 million. Now they can make a cap saving of $18 million by cutting him, but that's still $10 million in dead money. Marshawn Lattimore, next year, if he's still on the roster, $31 million. Cameron Jordan, $20 million. Derek Carr, $51 million. Now, they can make a cap saving of Derek Carr, good for them, of $1.3 million, but $50 million in dead money. Well, let's keep going. Ryan Ramczyk. $29 million his cap number is. Taysom Hill, $17 million. This is next year, by the way. Not this year, next year. They are already in the hole for $82 million next year. And I don't see a good way they can get out of it. They always do. But here's the thing, right? It's one thing getting out of the cap hell, but it's then another thing saying, what can we do with this non-existent money we have now? We can now, because it's been another year, extend Cameron Jordan's contract by another year. Cameron Jordan's, what, 34 now?
Mm-hmm.
He looks tired, bless him. Like,
so,
old. Yeah. Like, at some point, it's catching up, guys. And finally, I will rub it in the face of every single one of the Caps a Myth bros face when this all backfires, when they have the harshest rebuild that a team has had since the Lions. And admittedly, it works out fairly well for the Lions. But that's the point, though. The Lions understood what they needed to do. They understand what they were doing wasn't sustainable, and they needed to move on. And the Athletic podcast made a very good point in the sense that if they do this, they've got to move on from Mickey Loomis, and they can't really do that. That's not how this works. But I'm enjoying it. I'm going to put my feet up and watch the Saints explode. And as a result, watch all the Cap is a Myth guys sheepishly go back to, I don't know, crypto. I'm guessing that's what they're into. Thank you, Will.
It's remarkable that Alvin Kamara's cap number next year is the same cap number as Justin Jefferson.
Yeah.
Now, Alvin Kamara's a good player.
Yeah.
That's not right.
Yeah.
Justin Jefferson is also the highest paid non-quarterback in the league.
Yes, exactly. Alvin Kamara's void year is 2026.
Okay.
He's 29 next year. 29 this year, sorry. He's 30 next year. So yeah.
Wow.
So a 30-year-old running back that's not Derrick Henry with a cap number of 29 million. And there is lots of rumors that they're trying to ship him. And I love Alvin Kamara. He's one of my favorite players in the league to watch. But there, I don't think they'll find someone that's going to take on that contract unless it's someone that's... They're going to have to start packaging picks with the contract. I think the rebuild for this is going to be epic. So I think 2024 over the cap valuation was 14 million. And admittedly, his cap number this year was 18 million. So that's not that far off, but it's because they keep kicking the can down the road. And now they've got to a point where there is just a wall of cans that they can't get past.
The only problem is that to incentivize people to take on these contracts, you have to do a Brock Osweiler.
Yeah.
Whereby you say, hey, X team, if you take this player and this contract, we will give you a pick because no one wants it. No one wants Brock Osweiler at 18 million a year situation. So we're going to give you a first round pick.
I think the problem you've got with the Saints is they've got too many players to do that. So that there are only so many high value picks that they can bundle up with a ridiculous
especially
contract.
Especially when you're going to need to rebuild.
Yeah.
And you're going to need to rebuild.
Yeah.
But like the thing is that they will, if they can talk themselves into Spencer Rattler, they might just do that. And that would be awful because if you're mortgaging first round picks into future years just to get rid of bad contracts, you're hamstringing your rebuild.
Yeah, I mean,
hit on day two, guys.
They'll be fine. They've got cap space in 2026. They've got 36 million in cap space in 2026. So they'll be absolutely fine. Just let it happen. They'll be all right. Cap's a myth, guys. That's the important thing. Cap's a myth.
Don't look over here, Philadelphia Eagles fans. Nothing to see over in New Orleans.
Yeah, I wouldn't look. Yeah, it's a good point. It's a very good point. Sorry, Will.
That's okay.
Very cathartic.
I'm always happy for people to be shitting all over the Saints. The thing I have enjoyed laughing at the most, and it's a little mean to the poor lad, but just Will Levis. It's been totally cathartic to not have to support the Will Levis character like I did with Jameis. So this is how you guys felt for 5 years while Jameis was the quarterback of the Bucs, because this is funny.
Now, Will Levis is winning. You've the £250 and you've got framed every week. You've been framed even.
But Jameis was never that bad.
Yeah.
Never that comedically bad, surely. I don't remember Jameis.
I wasn't laughing that hard, this hard at Jameis.
No. No one was.
Mm.
No one was.
I think Will Levis capped it off by injuring a ball boy. That was crazy. That's like, of all, can you imagine when he got up and went, oh no, I've done it again. I can't do anything right.
It's this thing, right, that there's often scouting code for like players, okay? And the scouting sort of code words and dog whistles for Will Levis was that he was a big, tough football guy with a rocket arm. Spent a little bit too much time in the weight room. And that is a dog whistle for, he's a bit thick. And I think that Will Levis is the quintessential lovable Chad who's just a little bit thick.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, he puts mayonnaise in his coffee. I don't want to hammer that point home, but he does do that. It's a thing that he does. Yeah. So, yeah.
He probably also believes that all Diet Coke is microchipped, and that's how they're trying to control us.
But, you know, come on now. I mean, he might be an idiot, but... Come on.
You don't make the mistakes he makes if you have a fully functioning...
He's far more likely to believe in dolphins as a conspiracy theory than a microchipping Diet Coke.
The sentient dolphin revolution that's coming.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
The USSR's highly intelligent dolphin training program is going to get us all. That's the kind of conspiracy theory that Will Levis is going to believe in.
Yeah.
But dolphins with black berets and machine guns.
Yeah. And but French accents. Yeah,
amazing. Well, hopefully they can play quarterback for the Titans.
So there's a bit of a theme with our fellow gentlemen's things they've enjoyed laughing at the most. Josh says, is it wrong to say a certain injury at the weekend? Baz says, the Browns. Alan says, the Browns. Duncan says, the Cowboys. Oh, and the Browns. And Phil hasn't said anything, but I'm pretty sure he would also say the Browns.
He didn't need to say anything.
I did also say in brackets that maybe it's not appropriate for me to laugh at the Browns because laughing at someone's injury isn't funny. Oh, wait, haha, actually it is. So yeah, I did technically say the Browns as well. But so it's only Phil that hasn't laughed at the Browns, which is weird.
He never turns down an opportunity to laugh at the Browns. But here we go.
He must love them.
He must. There is no other explanation. Mm. Well, that's the end of our thoughts around where this young NFL season. But now it's time for us to preview Thursday Night Football.
Woohoo!
As the narrowly defeated Minnesota Vikings seek their revenge against a highly injured LA Rams team. Seems a little mean. I think, actually, were the Rams at full strength, this would be a classic. But the Rams are not at full strength. This is not going to be a classic. What says you, gentlemen?
I can't disagree with that. The Vikings somehow they look really good in that defeat against probably the best team in the NFC right now. The Rams should be challenging, but they're not because they've barely got any of their starting caliber players on the field at any one time. Matt Stafford is going to be running for his life in this one because I think Brian Flores has a point to prove against a genius head coach like Sean McVay. And I think Matt Stafford is going to see... I have faith in Matt Stafford under pressure. I don't have faith in Matt Stafford under the pressure that he's going to be facing in this one. Just because I don't think he can get the ball out quick enough, because I don't think anyone can get open quick enough for this Rams team. I also think that he's not a Hall of Fame quarterback like Jared Goff. So, you know, that's my new one, by the way. That's the new one that's going to wind people up. I'm going to go with that Jared Goff should be in the Hall of Fame, but Stafford shouldn't. So I think... it's hard to believe that Sam Darnold is the guy that we're getting excited about in this game, but I think he's gonna see many opportunities to make some very Sam Darnold-esque plays in this one, so that we've seen this season. So yeah. That's my thoughts.
Yeah. James, how do you think this game's going to go?
So offensively, the best receiver they're going to have is whatever remains of Cooper Kupp.
Yeah.
Defensively, I in terms of throwing the ball, this is going to be bad for the Rams. Very, very bad indeed in terms of sort of like pass defense. Their linebackers are objectively bad in pass coverage. Their secondary is hit or miss at best, and they have really struggled defending the middle of the field at the short, intermediate, and deep areas. And guess what the Vikings like to attack off of play actions? The deep and intermediate middle of the field. This is a recipe for catastrophe pie. And I have the funny feeling that the Rams might be eating a large family-sized portion of it. I mean, the defense has had some good, really, really good performance from Jared Verse, who actually looks like being so far the best of all of the young edge rushers this year so far, even better than Latu. Kobe Turner's still playing well, but that defense just isn't going to be able to handle what is coming for them this weekend. TJ Hockenson is not healthy yet. He won't be back this week, but that doesn't really matter. They've got Jordan Addison. They've got Jalen Naylor. They have Justin Jefferson. They have a healthy Aaron Jones, and they have a healthy Sam Darnold, and just enough of an offensive line to be able to handle this one quite easily.
I think Aaron Jones is the key to this one. Yeah, I think he could have a very good game.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that the Rams have sustained so many injuries. But I don't. When you're looking at a team that's an underdog, you've got to look at what potential paths they have to win, and those are very narrow. I don't think they're going to be able to run the ball at all on this team. So it's all up to the quarterback to just, you know, set the world on fire. And he just doesn't have the receiving talent to do that at the moment. Tyler Johnson is not it.
No.
So
no Puka Nacua, bits of Cooper Kupp, no Tutu Atwell. It's rough.
Yep. So yeah, I think it's going to be a fairly convincing Minnesota Vikings win.
Yeah.
Dan?
I'm with you there. Yeah, no, I'm going with that as well. I think convincing is the key here. So 31-10 to the Minnesota Vikings.
Nice. Yeah. James?
34-6 to the Vikings.
Yeah, and I'm in a similar boat, so 31-3 to the Vikings. Fantastic. Well, thanks for joining me, gentlemen, on another rip-roaring Tuesday podcast. If you want to get in touch with us and tell us just how wrong we are about some of our NFL opinions, there are a number of ways you can do that. You can follow us on Twitter. We are at Gridiron Gentlemen. You can come follow us on Instagram. We are at Gridiron Gents. You can email us, hellochaps@gridirongentlemen.com. But the best thing to do is to come and join our Discord channel, where we have chats all the time about NFL football. Sundays are the best. There is a live reactions thread on the Discord. It's great chatting NFL football with like-minded individuals. So come and join us. You can go to the pinned tweet or our Instagram bio to find permanent links to the Discord channel. We look forward to seeing you there. Thanks again, gents. Catch you guys next time.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.